Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Tuesday, the 10th of January, 2023. Welcome back into hour number three of the big show. Todd Albaugh, along with our producer engineer, Mr. Eric Zommers. Mr. Aaron Zommers, we are into hour number three. And here we are. I'm sorry. I had a little brain freeze for a second. But looking forward to that. Luke Mathers will be on the show at the bottom of the hour. Always a good time. A little Tuesday tangents. Find out what's on his mind and what is on his show, along with his co-host, Brian Kelly, coming up later on.
Oh, are they both coming on?
No, I'm just saying, he can preview what's going to be on their show at 2 o'clock this afternoon on most of these Civic Media stations, with the exception of WXCO, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, in which Chad Holmes will be on the show coming up on his program, The Chad Holmes Show, ironically enough. Who else would host The Chad Holmes Show but Chad Holmes? He will be on Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, from 2 until 4.
I don't know. I think it'd be pretty funny if he didn't host it.
Like, right?
If we have dueling tangents with Luke and Brian and nobody on the show is named Luke or Brian.
That would be something. But no, we'll talk to Luke Mathers at the bottom of the hour here. Also got to get Chad back on the show as well. Find out what's popping in Wausau. We will work on that. We'll also work on your weather forecast for today, which up in Amory, Wisconsin, on WXCE. Looking for areas of fog, like most of us today, across the parts of western and northern Wisconsin. Freezing fog as well. Again, that's when that heavy, dense fog just kind of flash freezes onto a cold roadway. So be careful of that. High of 31 today up in Amory. Tonight, snow and patchy freezing fog. An inch or two of snow possible, a low of 26. And then tomorrow, a chance of areas of freezing fog and patchy freezing fog. A high of 32 in Amory for tomorrow. Speaking of Bull Falls Radio, WXCO down in Wausau today. Areas of fog, once again, a high of 33. Tonight, a chance of snow showers, some patchy freezing fog, a low of 26. And Wednesday, a slight chance of snow showers, mostly cloudy, and a high of 34. And in WRCE land, in the RC, Southwest Wisconsin, news in the center. Expect areas of fog this morning, perhaps dense fog, a high of 32. Patchy fog and slight chance of wintry mix, less than an inch of accumulation tonight in Richland Center, a low of 26. And then, market 28, rather. And then for tomorrow, Wednesday, partly sunny and a high of 40 degrees. So not a bad day tomorrow, wherever you're going to be there, especially in southwest Wisconsin. You certainly don't want to be in California. What you need to know, on a Tuesday, the 10th of January, more than 34 million people in the southwestern U.S. are under flood watches today as a powerful storm continues to batter California. In the past 24 hours, up to 7 inches of rain fell across lower elevations of the state, while areas in the mountains reported up to 10 inches. The torrential downpour has forced thousands of evacuations, inundated roadways, and caused widespread damage across central and northern California. Now the storms are headed south. Will affect places like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Jose, and Las Vegas today. Be thinking of all those folks out there. Classified documents from President Joe Biden's time as vice president were discovered in a private office last fall. That was acknowledged yesterday by Biden's attorneys. It is unclear what the documents pertain to or why they were taken to Biden's private office at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, a space Biden used as part of his relationship with the University of Pennsylvania. Attorney Merrick Garland has called for an investigation into the matter, a source tells CNN. Republicans are also asking questions of Biden after his administration criticized former President Donald Trump for potentially mishandling classified records at Mar-a-Lago. House Republicans yesterday approved a rules package for the 118th Congress in what is marked as the first test of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ability to navigate his slim Republican majority. The package governs how the House will operate for the next 2 years and includes key concessions McCarthy made to the GOP hardliners to secure the leadership position, including the ability for a single member to call a vote to cast him out. The Golden Globes are back tonight, celebrating movies and television be on NBC, voted on by the Hollywood Foreign Press, who got criticized, and rightly so, for lacking diversity a couple of years ago. They weren't on TV last year. They returned to TV on NBC tonight, but unsure how many A-list nominees will show up. We shall see. Former Twitter employees that were impacted by a mass layoff in November are starting to receive their severance offers after months of waiting. But many are unhappy with the offer and conditions attached to it. The severance offers promises 1 month pay in exchange for agreeing to various terms, including a non-disparagement agreement, meaning you can't criticize Twitter, and waiving the right to take any legal action against the company. Most were dissatisfied with the offer, according to public posts, and attorneys representing ex-employees say it falls short of the 3 months of severance that new owner Elon Musk had previously promised. Surprise, surprise. The former Twitter employees are now stuck deciding whether to accept the money for a month or join hundreds of others who have already filed arbitration demands or lawsuits against the company. The Elon Musk saga rolls on. We will roll on as well. When we come back, we're going to talk about this story. A six-year-old shoots his first grade teacher. We'll discuss it after this. Stay with us. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Freedom. The Todd Allball Show. Time is 10:15. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Luke Mathers, Operations Director for Civic Media and co-host of Dueling Tangents with his broadcast partner, Brian Kelly, will be along with us for Tuesday Tangents here on the Todd Allball Show. Look forward to that. Before we get into this gun story, just a quick update here. We talked about this a couple of days ago. The robots, right? AI. And this, what is it, chat GPT or GPS or whatever it is, the chat bots.
GPT, where, yeah.
Thank you. Where computers can basically, AI, artificial intelligence, can learn how you talk and how you write and basically create a story for you. I'm not going to get into it too deep today, but we'll talk. Apparently now there's a new student who says he's created a program for school officials to use to detect this. Not sure how he did that, but we'll talk about that later. But now coming across the CBS News wires this morning, a robot lawyer powered by artificial intelligence is set to help a defendant fight a traffic ticket in court. An AI, an artificial intelligence robot, is now going to be used to help a defendant fight a traffic ticket in court. You see, the robots are coming. It starts in the courts. And it ends up with the AI dog robots that destroy us.
You know, as far as this goes, I think this could be something that's very useful. As long as it is for things like traffic tickets, you can free up public defenders and other lawyers to be able to dedicate more time to more important cases or more contentious cases. Because I feel like if you're disputing a traffic ticket, there's... I don't know. I think that that's something that could potentially be automated.
I just don't, I mean, sure. I mean, anything's potential, right? But I mean, if I'm the person, and obviously the defendant had to agree to this. I don't know if they got a cut rate or what, but had to agree to it. I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I used to work for my attorney friend, Sam Gold, and sat in a lot of courtroom cases, certainly more complex than the traffic tickets. Because the lawyer, or pardon me, the judge, is going to ask the attorney questions. Like, well, did your client do this, or does your client feel that? So maybe the robot isn't going to actually argue against, you know, in court. Maybe it's being used to do research. Sure, that I can see.
If that's the case, yeah. Awesome. That they're great at that.
Right.
They can read faster than we can.
Right. Research, fantastic. But actually, like, sitting there next to a live person defending them in court? I don't know. I saw that come across the wire, and I'm like, ooh, see? First, it's the chat, whatever. writing stuff for you, then they're defending this in court. And pretty soon there's an out-of-control dog robot with a brain coming after me. I don't like it, you understand? But again, I'm not a person who handles change well. I want to take a few minutes here before Luke Mathers comes on at the bottom of the hour. Switch gears just a bit, because this is a story that I don't think received enough attention. And it kind of happened over the weekend, so maybe that's part of it. But here's the headline from CBS News, in case you have not heard. 6-year-old who shot teacher took the gun from his mother, police say. Let me read that to you again, just in case you said, Todd, you know, you can't be, no, not six. Yes. Here is the headline. 6-year-old who shot teacher took the gun from his mother, police say. CBS News reports the police in Newport News, Virginia, provided new details yesterday about the shooting of an elementary school teacher, allegedly by a 6-year-old student. The shooting, which police say was intentional, took place at Rich Neck Elementary School in Newport News on Friday, January 6th. The teacher, identified as 25-year-old Abigail Swerner, was teaching a lesson when the child drew the weapon, Police Chief Steve Drew said at a news conference. The teacher, quote, took a defensive position, unquote, and held up her hand, Drew said. The bullet passed through her hand and entered her chest. She remains hospitalized and is reported to be in stable condition. That shot was the only one fired, Drew said. He said there had been no physical fight between the teacher and the student. The child was using a 9mm Taurus firearm, which Drew described as a handgun. Police said the gun was legally purchased by the child's mother. The child brought the weapon to school in his backpack, but Drew said the firearm was on the child's body, not pulled from the backpack at the time of the shooting.
Well, I happen to know that a Taurus is a pretty popular concealed carry option, so it is small. That is possible.
There you go. The police chief declined to provide information about the gun, about how the gun was secured at the home. Quote, I wish we never had to ask, how does a 6-year-old know how to use a firearm? I don't know that I can give you an adequate answer, the police chief said. It's unprecedented. I don't know how to answer that question. After the teacher was shot, get this, and this is remarkable. This woman deserves a medal of some kind. After Swerner, the teacher was shot, she was able to evacuate the children from her classroom. Drew recounted watching security footage showing the 17 to 20 children in the room spilling into the hallway and going into a neighboring classroom. The teacher, Zwerner, was the last person to leave the classroom, he said, calling her a hero.
Absolutely. That is, like, unfortunately, that's part of the responsibility of becoming a teacher nowadays, is being able to protect your class in situations like that, but actually being able to have the presence of mind after being shot to do that is incredible.
It is I'm not sure if this woman is a mother, but it's a parental instinct to protect your kids, your students. The police chief said it was heroic the way the students were taken care of. An unidentified female school official entered the classroom and restrained the child, police said, while Zwerner sought help in administrative offices. And that woman, whoever this unidentified school official, she is also a hero. To run into a classroom where a child has just shot his teacher and she subdued the kid. Police said they received a call about the shooting at 1:59 on Friday, and the first officers arrived on the scene 5 minutes later. The rest of the school was systematically evacuated, and parents were reunified with their children. Students who had been in the classroom where the shooting took place were brought to the school library, where they met with detectives and mental health professionals. Rich Neck Elementary School has canceled classes for this week. School Superintendent Dr. George Parker III said, adding that the school and district will learn from the incident to install more safeguards against violence. In no way do I believe we were fully prepared for a six-year-old to bring a weapon to school and shoot his teacher, Parker said. The child is being treated at a medical facility. An emergency custody order has been obtained, and a judge will need to determine the next steps within 96 hours from the time of the shooting. 6 years old. 6 years old. Now, let me hasten to add, because I know that a few people that know this story are thinking of this. When Todd was in fourth grade, I believe, I was helping my grandma clean out an attic, and there were some old fireworks left there. And one of them was an M60, I think. It's basically about 2 inches long and has a fuse on it. It's a big firework, just goes boom. Now, I chose to take that to school as kind of a show and tell. And I put it, and I showed a couple of my buddies, and I put it in my locker, and someone told the principal that I had, I don't know, fireworks there illegally, whatever. And I got called into the class, or I got called out of class. And my principal at the time, Mr. Marino, he sat me down in the office and he said, "Who gave you these?" I said, "My grandma." He goes, "Don't lie to me." I said, "My grandma." He sat me out in the hall and he called my grandmother. And she said, "Well, yes, I did give them to him." And so the principal came out and said, "Well, we'll forget this happened. Just turn them over to me and we'll forget it happened." So yes, as a fourth grader, I took some fireworks to school for show and tell. I was simply going to show them and say, "Look at these cool fireworks we're going to set off that I found in my grandma's attic with my grandmother." I was not going to use them at school to blow anything up or to harm anyone. This is a six-year-old in first grade who managed to get his mother's gun, handgun that she purchased legally. And as Aaron did the research or knows automatically, this is a gun that's used in a concealed carry situation. It's a handgun. This six-year-old knew enough to get that gun, to put it in his backpack, and somehow have it on his person. I'm not sure if the kid was wearing a hoodie and had it in there, put it in his sweatpants. I have no idea. It doesn't say. But somehow the kid had this handgun, six-year-old, on his person as the teacher is teaching. And for whatever reason, pulls the gun out, aims it at his teacher. She puts her hand up. He fires it. It goes through her hand, into her chest, and somehow, as Aaron said, she has the wherewithal to get the rest of the kids out of the room before she leaves, and then another teacher or faculty member runs in and subdues the six-year-old with the gun. And there are people out there that want to say, particularly Republican legislators, that it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people. You're telling me that a six-year-old had the wherewithal to plan out an assault on his teacher? What in God's name is going on? I mean, where are we at in this country that a parent has a handgun that the kid knows where it's at, there's no lock on it, and as the police chief pointed out, what six-year-old knows the proper way to load bullets into a handgun and then the proper way to fire the handgun and to hit a person? I mean, there are some major questions here. And the biggest one goes back to, what kind of gun control laws do we need in this country? It's sad. And what kind of mental health issues do we have out there? This is the state of things, folks. It's disturbing, to say the least. What is not disturbing, we are going to bring in our good friend Luke Mathers, Operations Director for Civic Media and host of Dueling Tangents. We'll have Tuesday Tangents with Luke after this.
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbull Show. It's 10:32 on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm not sure if Aaron was sending us a message there, but
this is part of our opener.
Oh,
it's a little Luke Bryan.
That's why Aaron is smarter than Todd. I just come in, I turn my mic on, I talk. Aaron pays attention. You know what my eighth grade social studies teacher told me, I continue to remember this. He said, Todd, never forget. You're not so poor that you can't pay attention. And here I am, I'm so poor that I can't even pay attention. Wise words from Ken Lewis, my eighth grade social studies teacher.
See, all my middle school teachers would get mad at me because the same note got sent home with like every report card. Makes friends with everyone. Needs to stop talking in class, because they would like move me around with the assigned seats and everything, and no matter where they put me, I would still strike up a conversation with whoever I was next to.
But it was a harbinger of things to come.
I was going
to
say, I guess you're in the right career.
Right? I mean, it was basically saying Luke is going to make a great radio talk show host.
My mom always faulted my dad for giving me the gift of the gab. So it's definitely one of those things that I've definitely inherited from him. And it showed up on those middle school report cards. And yes, I think it shows up now too.
In a good way.
Hopefully in a good way.
Absolutely. It's a long introduction to our program, our operations director here at Civic Media and the host of Dueling Tangents every afternoon at 2 o'clock here on the Civic Media Radio Network, along with Brian Kelly, Luke Mathers on a Tangent Tuesday.
Yeah, how you doing on this Tuesday, Todd?
I'm hanging in there. I'm finally coming out of my month and a half long illness between COVID and sinus infection. I feel like I'm on the downside of it.
Good. So, let's knock on some wood. So the hope it's behind you.
My head, yeah, absolutely. So, Luke is in to talk about all things, whatever he wants. Here's how good Luke Mathers is. Let me just tell you. I mean, we know that here at Civic Media. He's the glue that holds this puzzle together. But he is so good that he is quicker than CBS News Network breaking news. Because he came in, he said, you hear about California? I said, no, I try to keep up on things. I have nothing to
do
with
it. It was very difficult to do, too, when you're on the air. I totally understand that.
I didn't know. But Luke said, he gives me some news. And now he's going to give it to us, to you. And here, across my CBS notification, breaking news, tell us.
Well, the breaking news is Katie Porter, U.S. Representative in Southern California, I believe, for the Irvine area. I forget her exact hometown in California. But she announced that this morning that she is running for U.S. Senate in 2024. And it brings up a topic that's near and dear to my heart. If you've ever listened to Dueling Tangents from 2 to 3 p.m., it's kind of a recurring theme. I don't mean it in a bad way. There is one exception.
Before you go ahead, who will be her opponent?
Well, California is an interesting state, though. They don't have primaries.
Right, but it's for Dianne Feinstein's seat.
Right, it is for Feinstein's seat.
Right.
But there's not a Democratic and a Republican primary. There's a jungle primary is what it gets referred to. Anybody of any party affiliation can run, and the top two candidates then go to a runoff. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. There was concerns back when Gavin Newsom got recalled about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, that if Democrats were divided in the recall election, that Newsom could lose to two Republicans, and the two Republicans would be the runoff candidates for that general gubernatorial election then in the recall. And that didn't happen. Obviously, there was a lot of drumming up fears of that.
Sure.
Wisconsin's state Supreme Court race is very similar to this as well.
We talked about that this morning.
Yeah, it's a nonpartisan primary. So the top two candidates in February, later just 6 weeks from today, I believe.
I think you're
right.
Math.
Yeah. 6 weeks from today, the top two vote getters in that primary will move on to the April general. And so California will only have two general election candidates on that ballot. And Dianne Feinstein, I believe, served for like, it's got to be close to 30 plus years.
She's
now.
Been there
it's,
a long time.
It's several terms. Yep. Like it's getting on to the, in my opinion, grotesque nature of how some elected officials refuse to give up the seat that they've been serving in. I was not a fan of Jim Sensenbrenner when he was, I think, the second or third longest serving congressman before he retired back in 2020 or 2018 or 2018 or 2020. I forget when Sensenbrenner finally, it was 2020 because of Fitzgerald finally took that seat after helping, you know, at least in, engage in a little light insurrection with scheduling the fraudulent electors to meet in the Capitol.
I like that term, light insurrection.
Well, I mean, it's what it is. So it's what I'm going to call it. It's insurrection like light. He didn't storm the Capitol, but he assisted in getting the fraudulent elector ballot signed. And so the Dianne Feinstein served for a really long time. It seems like her office indicated that she wanted to continue and be on the ballot for 2024. And I think that that's really unfortunate that somebody isn't stepping up to try to say, well, hey, I think that there could be better leadership there. And I think Democratic voters in California are going to have a real opportunity to get some new leadership when it comes to the U.S. Senate. And so I don't think Katie Porter is the only individual that's going to be throwing her name in the ring for that, but Dianne Feinstein hasn't retired yet or announced that she isn't running for re-election, so it can lead to some interesting in-party fighting that between now and June of 2024, I believe, when that primary is.
Dianne Feinstein, born in 1933, she is 89.
And bless her soul, she has served in the U.S. Senate for a really long time. She was a pioneer for women in politics at the start of her career. But in my opinion, with only 100 seats in the U.S. Senate, I think it might be time to pass the torch. And I'm critical of really any octogenarian serving. I mean, we here in Madison, we had Fred Risser, who served till, I believe, 91 before he retired in 2020. And so it's I just don't like that. And I don't know about you, Todd.
I see it both ways. I think that if a person is still vibrant and can function, I mean, I was working for Dale Schultz in the state Senate when Fred Risser, up until his last about his last term, Fred was well into his 80s, well into his 80s when I was still there working for Dale. And I'm telling you, that guy was still taking the stairs every day to go up to his office on second or third floor. He... every year for his birthday, he's over 90 now. I'm not sure if he still does it, but into his 80s, well into his 80s, every year on his birthday, he rides the number of miles on his bike that he turns. I am 53.
That's fantastic.
There's no way I could ride 53 miles on my bike.
I can't ride 24 miles on my bike.
Fred Risser was still getting done. And his brain is still there. He's still with it. So I had no problem with that.
I'm not saying that Fred Risser couldn't serve either. I just think that there's a certain point where you, yes, I can appreciate the institutional knowledge. And I think that there are still people capable of serving. My glowing exception will be Elizabeth Warren. I think that woman has the charisma and energy to be able to go until she's 110, maybe even.
Do we know how old Elizabeth Warren is?
I believe Elizabeth Warren is going to, she's in... She's broken 70. I know
she's
that.
She's 73.
Yeah, I was going to say 72. Eric. So she's broken the 70s, and it'll be a little time before she hits 80. But she is the only person that I've kind of seen in that age category, and I didn't get to see Senator Risser in his in recent years up the Capitol up in person.
But he at least, you know, said 90 is probably enough, but he chose not to run for election. Chuck Grassley, I just looked it up. 89.
Yeah.
Just got reelected.
To a 6-year term.
In Iowa.
And that's ridiculous in my opinion.
96.
You're telling me that there's nobody else in Iowa? And Grassley's got an interesting... Grassley's grandson, whose last name is also Grassley, is like the...
The heir apparent?
The heir apparent, because he's in the state Senate, I believe, in the state house in Iowa. And it seems like if Chuck Grassley no longer can serve out that 6 years, that they might just fill it with another... grass.
Another grass?
Potentially. And it's just like, that I think is a little bit more malfeasance there. Dianne Feinstein, she like applauded Lindsey Graham on the Judiciary Committee back when the Republicans in the U.S. Senate decided to go against their own rule of not confirming a Supreme Court justice during an election year, that in 2020, as ballots were already being cast, they jammed through Amy Coney Barrett and, right, and gave her a seat on the Supreme Court after Ruth Bader Ginsburg had barely been in the ground at this point. And Amy Coney Barrett was getting confirmed by the U.S. Senate after Merrick Garland failed to get a hearing for 14 months, mm-hmm, whatever the exact total was there.
McConnell held it up because he wanted to make sure that was held open for a Republican.
Well, at that point, we knew it wasn't even going to be just any Republican. Right. He held it up to the point where we knew it was going to be Donald Trump. And so Dianne Feinstein applauding Lindsey Graham on the judiciary during that process makes me believe that, sure, she could run for re-election if she wanted to, but I think that there's plenty of appetite among a Democratic base in California that Katie Porter, who has officially announced that she's running for that 2024 seat in California, any number of Democrats are going to get into that race, I believe, too, and kind of force Feinstein's hand to choose not to seek re-election.
Well, I think you're kind of helping me make my point, which is I think it depends on the person.
Yes.
And I think that in Feinstein's case, she certainly had her day. She did some good things. But, yeah, I mean, what have we heard from Dianne Feinstein lately? What major bills did she push through when Democrats
had complete
control?
We get some jokes on Saturday Night Live that she, right, what kind of soup she ordered. Her and Chuck Grassley both, right, kind of in that
I think Dianne Feinstein is a great example of someone who fell into the system and became part of it. Yeah. And really isn't that effective for her constituents or the country. But it brings up an interesting topic. You got Joe Biden, who is on the cusp of announcing a second term. I believe if my math is correct, he would be 86 when he would finish his term if he would serve a complete second term. Now, I don't know about you, but I look at the field and look at the current conditions. I'm fine with Joe Biden running again for a second term. I think he should, because I don't know any other Democrat out there who is going to be able to unify the Democratic base and be as good a candidate against Trump at this point, or any other Republican.
He's the only one that's announced.
So what do you what do you think about Biden running again?
One of my biggest concerns in 2020 for then candidate Joe Biden was his age. Mm-hmm. I won't lie. I wasn't necessarily the drum chants with blue no matter who. I wanted to see Donald Trump lose because of the damage that he inflicted during his first term, the mishandling of the pandemic specifically, and just not being able to get out of his own way when it came to his ego. Like he took it personally that, right, the COVID-19 pandemic, he was saying it was going to be gone by Easter, and there were 5-10 cases right now, but it'll be gone. Like,
but if you weren't blue, no matter, you're saying you were not blue.
And so I was pretty much going to vote for a Democrat, but the fact that Joe Biden quickly kind of got anointed, very similar to our anointment of the Senate process here, it upset me that we didn't get to see that primary actually go through. And Joe Biden's age was my biggest concern, but he's had a hell of a term. So far, half a term so far. We got one session of Congress. They had the same majority that Republicans are floundering with right now in the House of Representatives. Democrats, led by Joe Biden, used that very narrow majority in the House of Representatives to be able to crank out record-setting bipartisan legislation. And so Joe Biden's been able to prove that he could get it done. So his track record so far makes me think age isn't necessarily a huge problem.
See, I find this fascinating, enormously fascinating. I was a diehard Republican for 25-plus years, and I think it's fair to say you were not. You've been more on the progressive side your entire life. And I, in 2020, was a blue no-matter-who type of guy. I was for Pete Buttigieg in the primary, but when that wasn't going to happen, I instantaneously said, yes, Uncle Joe is the guy. I want Uncle Joe, because just like Tony Evers, who's kind of the milquetoast grandfather that everybody can relate to, I said, America needs a grandfather who understands empathy and pain and compassion, and that's the guy to bring us together. And I didn't care how old he was. He was clearly competent, and I'm sick of Republicans and others saying that somehow he has mental problems because he has a stutter. And he has to work every single time he's in public not to stutter, because when he's not in public, he is a very severe stutter. And that's what creates this perception that, oh, he has mental problems. He doesn't. He has a stutter.
And I think he's demonstrated that he doesn't.
And it's not that I wasn't going to go vote for Joe if it came down to that. I was just begrudgingly supporting the candidacy of, because my age, late 20s, is there are a lot of my friends that are like, well, what's the difference between the two? And I spend a lot of time sharing what the differences are. That's what we're doing here.
And we're going to share more. Back with Luke Matthews after this. You listen to the Tyler Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back with the final segment of a Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers on the Todd Audible Show, the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 10:50. Coming up at the top of the hour, Kristen Bry, who I talked with a little bit last night over text, kind of comparing notes. She has a great show on tap. Pam Jahnke, the farm babe, as she goes by. Ever heard? She's fantastic. Oh, has the farm Midwest Farm Report on another station, but also does stuff for Channel 3. I met her a few times. There is nobody in the state of Wisconsin who is more for agriculture and who does more to promote it than Pam Jahnke, fabulous farm babe, coming up on Kristen Bry's As Goes Wisconsin at 11 o'clock.
See, I just think of Charlotte's Web when you say farm babe, because I think of Babe the Pig.
Well, maybe that's
just where my mind goes. I'm not a farm boy.
Maybe that was intentional.
I don't know.
But she goes by the fabulous farm babe. She has, just like Crute has Devil Radio on his vehicle, she has farm babe on her vehicle.
Awesome. Yeah.
So tune in for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry at the top of the hour. Later on most of these stations, with the exception of WXCO, Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, where Chad Holmes will take over.
The terrific
Chad Holmes show. On the rest of the Civic Media Network, you can hear the terrific Dueling Tangents with our guest, Luke Mathers, right now. I almost said Luke Bryan.
You wouldn't be the first. It is Luke and Brian. So he put that in there. Brian produced our opener, and he had some fun with it. There's a couple Star Wars references.
I get that part, yeah.
Yeah, the Luke Bryan song, and then we used some Boston because we both like a little of that classic rock to carry out the intro.
I'm giving you a chance now to revise and extend your comments, as they say in D.C. I just want to make clear.
Clarity, that's all.
We were talking this last segment, about this news that Katie Porter has announced that she is going to run for United States Senate in California in 2024. And a discussion on age issues in Congress and otherwise. And you were saying in 2020 that you were not a vote blue.
I wasn't the one screaming that. I wasn't screaming blue no matter who and trying to force that down people's vote.
But were you going
to
vote for independent, or kind of where was your gut?
My gut was, because I'm more of a progressive individual. I'm not necessarily tied with the Democratic Party. Ooh. I've always kind of viewed myself as a little bit more politically independent. I want progressive policies, and so therefore I vote for Democrats. But I wanted to see some generational change in 2020. That's where my head was at. Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, I think, were the two candidates that most accurately articulated the views that I would like to see implemented by an administration. Now, that being said, I think Joe Biden has outperformed my expectations tenfold, because Obama's, in both terms for the Obama administration, were trying to break the fever that was Republican obstructionism and apathy. And we didn't see it break throughout 8 years of an Obama administration. And Joe Biden was a part of that. So I was skeptical to believe that the bipartisan, I can get people to work together narrative that Joe Biden was crafting, the fight for the soul of the country, I wasn't necessarily sold on that. And over the last 2 years, he's delivered in a lot of different ways. And maybe it was that I was skeptical. Maybe it was I just wanted to see more of my personal views implemented in the federal government. But at the same time, you got to give the man credit for what he's been able to do.
We read the story on this show. Newt Gingrich here, 3 or 4 weeks ago, put out a column, a piece. It was snarky, but it was. But the point of it was still held true, which is Gingrich is writing to his own party and saying, quit underestimating Joe Biden. He's making you guys look like fools.
And to be fair, I think they're doing a lot of that legwork. But yes, Joe Biden getting as much done and kind of being able to share the juxtaposition last week of him doing a bipartisan event in Cincinnati.
With Mitch McConnell, no less.
With the minority leader in the U.S. Senate.
And give McConnell credit, right? Because he's kind of said, screw this. I'm not going to keep playing along with the Trumpsters and the Republican line. I'm going to save my own skin. And I'm going to do, you know, I might hate Joe Biden, but I'm smart enough to know to go to my own home state and stand in front of a bridge and say, hey, we worked together to bring this to Ohio or to Kentucky.
Kentucky and Ohio, right there across the border. Right. I don't want to give Mitch McConnell too much credit. I mean, he could have whipped those votes. He could have saved himself so many future headaches by at the time of the impeachment, the second impeachment.
Right.
He could have whipped those votes, I think.
But
removed and not eligible for the future ballots.
I detest... I maybe detest this too. So I can't stand Mitch McConnell in so very many ways, numerous to count. But I do think you got to give the man credit. He understands how the smarmy system of Washington works.
He knows how to cover his own back. I'll give him a golf clap for that, but I don't. nothing else than I'm not going to go out of my way and give him praise.
I think he's the longest serving majority leader now, at least on the Republican side, ever, or at least in modern times, last I read.
That's correct.
Yeah. And I mean, let me tell you, you got to do something to hunker down.
If you have that control over your caucus, though, and then you don't whip, how many senators? 7 Republicans, I believe, voted for the impeachment in 2021. They could have had the votes. It could have been possible had McConnell wanted to whip them.
Yeah, and he didn't want to.
Exactly. So he could have saved the country and his party and all of us so much of the political pain that we're going to experience over the next 2 years with a twice impeached president trying to run for re-election or run for a, I guess it's not technically re-election there. I don't know what you call it.
An election.
Grover Cleveland was the only
a second time to be run for one more term. I don't know. But don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that I support McConnell or think he's a great guy.
Yeah,
yes. He could have.
This is all I'm going to do.
All I'm saying is even my opponents, I will respect their savvy or their ability to work the rules of a system.
Oh, yeah. I won't underestimate Mitch McConnell's slimy political tack.
We have 2 minutes left. The floor is yours, my friend. You can either talk about dueling tangents, what's coming up, if you want to update folks on any hot news on civic media. What do you got for us the last 2 minutes on a Tuesday tangent?
Yeah, we got some really exciting news that I can't quite really reveal yet.
On the cusp of reveal.
We're almost there. Yeah. We are almost there. Right. By next Tuesday, I'm hoping to be able to share some more information for the network. But we've got some pretty great shows coming up for Dueling Tangents. Later today in the 2 o'clock hour, Sean Fetteplace of Main Street Alliance is going to be joining us. He's going to be coordinating a day of action for small business owners representing Main Street around the state coming up in February. And he'll be joined by one of the members of Main Street Alliance and state representative, Francesca Hong. So she'll be on the show with Sean.
Awesome.
Yeah. William,
it's a big show.
It's going to be a big show this Tuesday afternoon.
And William's on too?
William's on tomorrow.
My God.
Wednesday's with William Walter. And then Thursday, Alan Robinson is going to be updating us about some medicinal marijuana possibilities in the new state legislature.
Republicans seem to be kind of cooler or kind of warming to this. They're thawing on medical marijuana.
Yes.
You're hitting it out of the park, Luke Mathers. Hit after hit. All he does is hit home runs, ladies and gentlemen. It is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian at 2 o'clock this afternoon on the Civic Media Radio Network, with the exception of XCO, which has the Chad Holmes Show. Thank you to...
Yes. I do think we should start calling him Babe Luke.
No, please don't. You all are too kind, but please don't do that.
Okay, yeah, that's a really bad
thank idea. You to Aaron Zomers for being our engineer and producer. Thanks to Luke Mathers for being our guest. And thank you for listening to us. We will see you tomorrow. Until then, keep banging your drum. This is Todd Albaugh on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, welcome.